And access to those underserved communities in as many as 10 languages. Please make a pledge of support. It's listener supported. Pledge online at kfai.org. It really matters. Thanks so much.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio. KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at kfai.org. Non-commercial, community-powered radio. And one of the ways that you can power this radio with your community, pledge of support financially. And we're just last 2 days of the pledge drive, 612-375-9030. At this time, on Thursdays, we have the Northern Sun Radio News Show with your host, Don Olson. And Dave Gudnick is here, and we're going to be have a lot of things coming up, but give us a call at 375-9030 and the 612. And we're getting there, but we sure could need a phone call from you for news that you don't get anywhere else, like Democracy Now! And on this show, Northern Sun Radio News. Dave, you want to...
Yes. thanks, Don. Well, yeah, there's a lot that's happening. The news is dramatic, as has been said in certain eras. Years are passing in days. World economy is already in contraction from the confrontation in the Gulf, which is blocking most, not all, shipments. And negotiations, despite a lot of noise, are not happening. There's extremely divergent aims, and Iran is actually in a powerful position. Doesn't mean they're going to get everything they want. Doesn't mean there's not going to be wider war this weekend. In fact, there might well be. But... there's a lot of good speakers we've got today, military and other, to try to explain what they think of this mess and what's a possible way forward. And this includes a lot of military people I want to make mention. Some of you may have heard Democracy Now! a day or two ago with the Pentagon whistleblower Wes Bryant talking about what's wrong with this war after 20 years in the United States Air Force. Joe Kent got in the news recently with his resignation statement, which we mentioned last week. And this very morning at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., just a few hours ago, several veteran and military people and intelligence spokespersons sponsored by the Eisenhower something Institute at the National Press Club. You can find it, both the tape and the transcript, at consortiumnews.com. And that was this very morning. So, yeah, the economic impact is going to be tremendous. We're going to have to cover this in a lot more detail at a later point, because I could talk for this entire program about the damage being done to the world economy. Not just to the Gulf, but U.S. and world economy, but there's just too much to say. There's so many things being blocked, not just gas and oil, but fertilizer, sulfuric acid, and there's a migration financially away from U.S. bonds. So there's a lot to cover at another point. But let's get on to Colonel Wilkerson here, who's being interviewed on Al Jazeera, which is sponsored by Qatar, but has enough divergent viewpoints that a lot of countries and places have banned their listeners and citizens from accessing Al Jazeera because they're apparently not intelligent enough to hear another point of view and make up their own minds. Okay, here we go.
Or former U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell. For 16 years, he was a distinguished visiting professor of government and public policy at the College of William and Mary, and he joins us now live from just outside of Washington, D.C. Colonel, it did seem at the beginning that Donald Trump expected a quick win here. Well, coming off the high of what happened in Venezuela, well, he's certainly not got that. Is the U.S. and Israeli strategy in danger of unraveling?
I think very much so. Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper that I read, the only one that Bibi doesn't own, had a headline the other day that was very, very accurate. It said, Iran needs to not lose to win. Donald Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu need a spectacular victory to win. they will not achieve that spectacular victory. And in fact, now Hezbollah is showing a resilience and a resoluteness that Bibi underestimated also. So he's got at least a two-front war, and arguably an even bigger war than that, because he's got an appetite for other places like Syria, as well as Lebanon, Gaza, and the West Bank.
But what about the strategy employed during this conflict? Okay, but you know, has that strategy been conflated with its objective, which is, well, ephemeral at best? I mean, we've had nine reasons from Donald Trump for starting this war.
Tell me what the objective is, and if you give me a good one, I might assume it is the objective, because I have heard nothing from my military, nothing from the State Department, and certainly nothing from the White House that even resembles a coherent objective, let alone a achievable objective. What I've heard is everything from, this will be a short war, this will be a long war, this will be a ground force war, this will be an air war, this will be a missile war. I don't think they know what they're doing, frankly, and that is very disturbing for a man like me who's spent 31 years in the American military and most of the time knew what we were doing. I don't see anyone in this group that looks like they know what they're doing, certainly not the Secretary of Defense, War, Hegseth, and certainly not the President. And I might as well throw the National Security Advisor / Secretary of State in there, Marco Rubio, too. They don't seem to know what they're doing, and they're not using the statutory decision-making process. As Tulsi Gabbard indicated vividly to Congress, even though she also indicated a total ignorance of that process.
And Colonel, we don't actually even know what's actually happening within Israel, whether the ballistic missiles that Iran has fired, and they're getting better in terms of the quality of them as ordnance is depleted in Iron Dome and other defense systems.
Well, they're putting Karam Shahs in there now, Mach 3, Mach 4 missiles, many of which have the, I don't call them cluster warheads, I call them MIRVed warheads, like our nuclear missiles. That is to say, they're much better than cluster bombs or cluster warheads. And I've seen video, I've seen live video smuggled out, to be sure, because Israel has cracked down on it majorly. And I have seen the damage done to Haifa and the oil facilities there and the port there. I've seen the damage done to Ben Gurion. I've seen the damage done internally to Tel Aviv. I've seen people die on the street running between bomb shelters. So the devastation being wreaked on Israel, despite their blockade of any information getting out, is leaking out.
How do you think that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is viewing all this now?
I think he's probably getting somewhat desperate. And I recall to my mind, sadly enough, gravely enough, what he said in Hebrew to his entourage of like-minded people about 4 or 5 days ago in a bunker, which was, they will get a big surprise if this keeps up. Words to that effect in Hebrew. They essentially were translated for me as, they cannot imagine what I'm going to do to them. Well, there's only one way, as a military professional, I interpret that. I interpret that as he's going to use a nuclear weapon.
Well, that would be one thing which they had countenanced before in the 1973 war with Golda Meir.
Yes, yes. Here, I'm very concerned as a military professional who knows something about nuclear warfare. I studied it for 18 years. I was a prefix 5 officer, for example, which means I knew about nuclear weapons. If you really wanted to damage Iran in a significant way that might bring them to the table to surrender, you wouldn't use one. You'd have to use multiple weapons, because Iran is a country as big as Western Europe. It has some incredibly daunting terrain in the Zagros Mountains in the Dasht-al-Kavir Desert. It is a huge country, and these small nuclear weapons, and they are small, are not going to do that much damage unless you mass them, and you mass them on key underground targets. So I don't think this is going to be a single use of a nuclear weapon. If he does do it, it's going to be multiple weapons.
But he'd also break the nuclear taboo, but not nearly Of course, that would be the worst kind of outcome here. But a second worst outcome possibly would be the U.S. and Israel putting boots on the ground.
That's not a very good prospect either, as you just said. I've seen the so-called plan for using the Marine Expeditionary Units that are now making their way toward Karg Island, a long way away right now. One carrier and group are in the Red Sea, and I think the others up in the Mediterranean still. So if they do it, they're going to have to do it with Ospreys. They're going to have to do it with aircraft, in other words. And they're going to have to stage out of Kuwait or some other similar place close by, because the range of an Osprey is only about 400 miles. So if they're going to do this, it's going to be extremely dangerous. It's not going to be Venezuela, and I fear that's what they're thinking about the precision of Venezuela. They can implement that in the Persian Gulf. I've got news for them. I planned for warfare in the Persian Gulf for 4 years at the Pacific Command, where we were the command responsible for it. And it isn't easy territory. None of Iran is easy territory, not even Karg Island, the Forbidden Island, as it's called. It's a very crucial facility. It's essential to Iran's oil program. But I think it's a little bit too far to think that we can take it and not get an enormous casualty count out of that.
Where will this conflict, in your view, with what you've said, leave America, Colonel, and its position in the Middle East?
Gone. That's my professional view. I think the Arab countries in particular, but all the countries, including Egypt, and I don't consider them an Arab country, have learned that the security agreement with the United States is a false one, that they have been attacked and attacked and attacked, and that they might be attacked even further and in a more deadly way. And so they're going to be looking for new big daddies, if you will. And
yeah, so that's indicating that both the Arab states, and the Iranian state have learned not to trust the United States after being betrayed with the promises made for protection, promises made for disarmament, and so on. And just to key in on what Wilkerson said there, there's no clearly articulated military strategy. This is a disastrous way to get into an escalating, out-of-control situation. And don't blame it all on Trump. You know, this is a result of many years of strategizing and so on. We have an impressionable, impulsive, manipulable president, but there's a lot of people behind him, and it isn't even necessarily Trump who's offering up what the strategy is. Now, here's Chaz Freeman, who's an experienced diplomat, also one of our familiar voices, and he's on Judge Napolitano. We've got about 7 or 8 minutes of him, and I want to, before getting to him, one of the things he said that's not on this tape, which is really good, which is describing our strategy. Listen to this. It's power without purpose, violence without vision, and means without ends. This is why we're heading into disaster. Okay, here's Ambassador Chaz Freeman on Judge Napolitano.
Truly appreciated the analysis on the loss of the petrodollar. Profound. And another example of what the Americans didn't anticipate and should have.
Well, sorry, I'm going to jump to the section I wanted here. I didn't realize it was on the other part of the tape. So here's again Judge Andrew Napolitano interviewing Chaz Freeman.
Our bungled war with Iran. Why? There is a rumor going around that we are now offering a meeting with J.D. Vance in Pakistan with this gentleman. Why on earth, given the bounty on his head and the Israeli threat to murder him, would he go to Pakistan, even if he were in some respect disloyal to the regime, which he is not? And finally, why should anyone believe that Steve Witkoff, who apparently has been texting the Iranian foreign minister, probing for an opening to end the war, why should anyone want to talk to him? He thoroughly discredited himself by participating in two negotiations for the sole purpose of deceiving the Iranians, lowering their guard, so that there could be a surprise attack. You know, there's the old saying, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me.
Right.
Three times and the game is over. Nobody's going to play. So I think just before the president announced a purported halt in bombing of Iranian power plants and energy facilities, which the Iranians said would result in immediate heavy retribution for Israel and the Gulf Arabs, and the total closure of the Strait of Hormuz, as opposed to its operation as a sort of toll road, which is how it's operating now. Immediately before that, 15 minutes before the announcement, about $2 trillion moved in the oil futures market. Somebody made a lot of money betting on a sharp fall in prices, followed by a bounce back. The bounce back has now happened, suggesting that the gullibility of the market, which has been extraordinary up to this point, manipulated by rhetoric rather than facts, has been exhausted. The market now is skeptical. Brent is back over $100 a barrel after having fallen significantly as a result of the president's, I think, entirely fake announcement.
Yeah, we'll be returning a little later with another speaker to the market manipulation business, because one of the things going on is Trump's cronies raking in lots and lots of dollars. Okay, one more and a couple more in a minute, but let's take a break here and hear about our local Women Against Military Madness.
Thank you.
Yes, I'd like to introduce Molly Wilbur Cohen, and you're the secretary, I think. Well, you're on the WAM Board of Directors, Women Against Military Madness, and you have a couple events coming up this weekend, at least one, the annual meeting.
Yes, thanks a lot, Don and Dave, for having me on your show. Yeah, this is Molly Wilbur Cohen, and I am indeed the secretary of the board for Women Against Military Madness. But I want to tell you all about the Women Against Military Madness annual meeting this Saturday, March 28th, at the New City Center, the old Walker Church, at 3104 16th Avenue South in Minneapolis. This year, our theme is Stop the Wars at Home and Abroad. The event starts at 9:30 a.m. on Saturday, and you can get some breakfast. What a deal. We'll have all sorts of yummy options.
Equation.
And it's all free. Our program starts at 10 a.m. with two speakers. First will be Medea Benjamin, who is a leading social justice advocate and co-founder of the women-led Code Pink and the human rights group Global Exchange. She has also co-founded the Peace in Ukraine Coalition and many other initiatives. Medea has fought in solidarity with Palestinians for many years. She has led delegations to Gaza, and she organized the Gaza Freedom March in 2010. She is one of America's most committed fighters for human rights. And she also has just returned from Cuba. Now, Medea has deep ties to Cuba. On her most recent trip to Cuba, she brought humanitarian aid and denounced the Trump-initiated oil embargo. She will also be part of the humanitarian flotilla to Cuba in April. That is fabulous. I also don't want to forget to tell you about some of her latest books. Just a sec here. She has authored, I think, total of 11 books, including Drone Warfare, Kingdom of the Unjust, Inside Iran, and War in Ukraine. Her latest book, NATO, What You Need to Know, was actually co-authored with David Swanson, who's the director of War... David
Thompson, is it?
Sorry about this. This is crazy. Anyway, it's one of those against war. So I am sorry. I'm losing it here. Anyway, her articles appear in outlets like The Hill and Salon, where she continues to inspire global audiences in her pursuit of peace and justice. She's a frequent guest speaker at rallies and conferences and has appeared on Democracy Now!, Al Jazeera, and more. Okay, now we're going to get to our second speaker for our event on Saturday. Our second speaker will be Lena Crandall, who is an organizer from Minneapolis and is a member of the Anti-War Committee and the People's Action Coalition Against Trump. Now, the speakers will connect the dots from the wars the U.S. is fighting to the war on the people here at home. And afterwards, there will be a Q&A. After this wonderful panel of those two speakers, we're going to have a raffle with lots of great items to choose from, and we'll tell you about upcoming events, especially the Walk Against Weapons, which will be June 6th. So get that on your calendar. We'll wrap up the first part of our annual meeting around 11 o'clock. For those who like to attend the business part, which is also really exciting, that will follow and last until 12 noon. Now, don't worry, there'll be lots of time to get to the No Kings rally at the Minnesota State Capitol, which starts at 2 p.m. if you're planning to go. So I hope you can make it, and please tell your friends. Thanks very much.
And that's the birthplace of Walker Church, of KFAI, and the old Walker Church, which is now the New City Center. And that's at 31st and 16th Avenue South. Dave, do you have some more?
Walker Church was the birthplace of a number of things. And also, speaking of Cuba, my friend in the Minnesota Cuba Committee told me that last night at the film festival, they raised over $1,000 for solar panels to Cuba, just from the audience there. And there's one more week next Wednesday at the Cuba Film Festival at St. Anthony on Main. Now back to Judge Napolitano again. We have John Mearsheimer, prominent historian, has a lot to say, and in the past wrote famously about the Israel lobby, and been a great voice against the U.S. International actions and stance. So let's hear a little bit from Judge Napolitano.
We want them to give up their ballistic missiles. We want them to give up their nuclear enrichment capability. We want them to stop supporting the Houthis, Hezbollah, and Hamas. This is not a set of demands that there's any chance the Iranians would accept. So how do you get a deal here?
I don't know, but here's what the Iranian foreign minister had to say yesterday. About the President Trump's claims that negotiations are going on. Chris, number 10.
I don't think the question of talking with Americans or negotiation with Americans once again would be on the table, because, you know, we have a very, bitter experience of talking with Americans. We negotiated with them last year, in last June, and they attacked us in the middle of negotiations. And again this year, they tried to convince us that this time is different. They promised us that they don't have any intention to attack us. So, and they wanted to resolve the Iran's nuclear question peacefully and to find a negotiated solution. And we finally accepted. But again, after three rounds of negotiation, and after the American team in the negotiation, said itself that we made a big progress, still they decided to attack us. So I don't think, you know, talking with Americans anymore would be, on our agenda anymore.
I don't think that talking to the Americans anymore would be on our agenda anymore.
So, Judge, just summarizing what the Iranian spokesman said, and as I mentioned at the very beginning, the sides are very, very far apart in terms of what at least their official negotiating stance is. So the problem is the buildup of troops and the buildup of narrative momentum and the fact that the markets will have closed so there won't be such a disastrous impact from war. There's a good chance that it's going to happen this weekend. So don't say you didn't know we might be in a world war in a couple days here. One more, maybe two more if we have time. Jeffrey Sachs, another famous professor and have a tremendous international experience over many years, and another great spokesman. He's on Glenn Deason. I like Glenn Deason a lot. He's a professor in Norway of international relations, specializing in Russia, and has good things to say himself, but mostly he brings on people and lets them talk. And let me just pull up Glenn Deason here. What happened to it? Here we go.
Three. However, the Iranians come out and say, well, we never actually had any talks at all. Not direct, not indirect. How do you make sense of this? Is Trump walking back, or is he simply waiting, preparing for his ground troops to arrive to the region? How do you make sense of this?
It's not easy to make sense of a president of the United States that just brazenly lies in a way that is exposed immediately. So there were no talks, much less what Trump said of great progress and comprehensive deals. So there are, of course, many theories, and I don't think we can absolutely land on one of them as being decisive. One theory, which I think really needs to be taken seriously, is that Trump confabulates, meaning that he lives in a delusional world. I believe he is a mentally ill man, and a lot of psychologists believe that he's suffering from the frontotemporal dementia, combined with the underlying pathology of malignant narcissism, meaning the guy's a megalomaniac, the guy is a narcissist, the guy is a psychopath, and that's been true his whole life. But that in addition to that, he's losing it. He's been nasty, but he's losing it. Okay, that's the psychological interpretation. I think we should not put it aside because Trump is extraordinarily erratic right now. His sentences are not coherent. Sometimes the words are not coherent. And while this is kind of brushed aside to get to the political or tactical analyses, I think this needs to be taken very seriously, in fact. I've spoken over many years about Trump's mental state, his dark triad personality, his obviously psychopathic, obviously narcissistic. What the psychologists have told me for many, many years is that the conditions would worsen, and recent analyses by the psychologist, by several, say that there are all the evidences of a greater impulsivity, a lack of speech capacity in the ways that phonemic paraphrasia is one condition, which means you don't finish the words properly. So this, I think, is very real. Then there is, a second kind of purely tactical possibility, which is Trump, idiotically, because I think it's undeniable the man's just not smart. So he painted himself into a corner with an impulsive 48-hour threat. He couldn't fulfill it. the markets were tanking in Asia. Trump can't stand the markets tanking in the United States, so he had to do something. And this theory is, you know, he's just so stupid that the best thing that he can come up with is a lie that is disproved within moments. That's plausible, too, that this is just backing off from something that because he's not very clever. A third possibility, which many people subscribe to and is not mutually exclusive, is that he or his cronies are front-running the markets. And so the markets are swinging. They make announcements. They knew that this would cause stock markets to rise, oil prices to fall. And all you have to do is have a one-minute advance notice of what the president's going to say, and voila, you can make millions of dollars in the easiest possible pickings. And there are people who are analyzing that there are mysterious trades in the market a minute or two before market opening and so forth. I don't discount this at all, because the brazen corruption of this administration is beyond belief. What's also true, of course, is that Trump says anything, anytime, but the deeper movements of troops says that we're going to have a ground invasion of some kind, with the thousands of Marines heading towards the region. It hardly seems like we're at this great diplomatic breakthrough that Trump is talking about. And as time goes on, from these announcements a couple of days ago, the Iranians have said repeatedly, no, sorry, there's no negotiations with the Americans this way, that way, directly, indirectly, but the Marines keep coming. And bottom line, Glenn, I think Trump is without any plan at all. I don't think that there is any military strategy clear. I think he's flailing around. I think he's psychologically disordered. And so if this is at least partly confabulation, that he thinks there were negotiations, it wouldn't shock me, although it's hard to prove. But if you cut through everything and ask a different question, not why did he do it, but what's going to happen, I think we're on a path of escalation. Obviously, despite the great progress that Donald Trump talked about, immediately there was shelling by Israel of Tehran. There was counter missile attacks by Iran on Israel. There wasn't the slightest hint of any pause in anything. And we know that the Marines are on the way. So this is an escalating battlefield, extraordinarily dangerous. And I don't give any credence at all to bilateral negotiations. I have one maybe vain hope that won't pan out at all. But I have one hope that's not based on negotiation, but on a different kind of diplomacy, which is that Presidents Putin and Xi and Prime Minister Modi, who represent a lot of the world and are powerful countries, will say clearly to Donald Trump, probably in private, you've got to stop this. This is completely out of control and unacceptable. And that hasn't quite happened yet, but I think that that is, for me, the only hope that I have for a diplomatic off-ramp. It's not based on negotiation. It's based on basically someone or three leaders of considerable stature saying to the President of the United States, this is the reality. You can bullshit all you want on your Truth Social and all the rest, but this is the reality. the world's about to go up in flames. If you continue this way, you've got to stop.
Okay. Molly and Don, let's talk about this for a few minutes. I want to review some of the things that have been said today. We have the military people in large numbers telling us this is an absolute disaster. There's no clearly articulated military strategy or plan. And as Ambassador Chaz Freeman said, we're manifesting power without purpose, violence without vision, and means without ends. We're lost in the wilderness, threatening world war. And reminding you of what Jeffrey Sachs just said, we have various, not necessarily mutually exclusive, explanations for our behavior of the nation at the highest level. First of all, we have a mentally disordered president. No disputing that from me. Also, he may be simply backing off from being in a corner. And whether that means he'll change his mind again tomorrow or not, we don't know. Then there's the market manipulation, which is clearly being looked at and commented on by people in the financial world, all around the world, really. And we have ground troops and the enormous military momentum that's been built up on the assumption that there would be war. And so just like the overall military-industrial complex in this country, there's enormous momentum just from having all those resources and having all that budget and having all the media influence. So there's an enormous inertia that's contributing toward the chance of war. And one thing Sachs didn't mention for some reason is the ongoing Israeli pressure, a really key factor in why this war has been happening and is escalating. So let's hear some comments.
Well, it's interesting that Trump does display a lot of psychological problems, but some of my left-wing friends, very left-wing, will say, well, he's all controlled by the deep state. He's just a pawn of these other people. Perhaps, but he seems to be making a lot of these decisions himself, and he's following through on it. And the military, it seems, has been, a lot of the upper military has been cowed into just going along with it. They had that infamous confab in Virginia that Secretary of Defense War Hegseth called and had all the top admirals and generals, and he said, you got to follow what we say or else. So whether this has been enough to get the all these military leaders just to follow along, even when it might be, go against their best advice as to what should happen or what do happen, and whether they are not saying anything because maybe they're afraid of losing their privileges.
Yeah, where's honor and duty?
Honor and duty is right. And but they do have privileges. They are set up for, sometimes Trump has threatened to take away a senator from Arizona who was speaking out against certain Trump things. He was going to take away his money that he would get from when he retires. So this could be something that is lurking in the minds of some of these people, because I'm sure they have a very comfortable retirement ahead of them. So it's the good thing is that there's been much more opposition from people in the streets. There's no King's rallies that were last year were quite good, and we're going to kick off again this year. They're against Trump. I've been told that the No Kings rallies are not anti-war, and a lot of it is from the Democratic Party, but Democratic Party has not been covering itself in glory.
They're not anti-war.
That's for sure. Back to, if I can just quick sneak in here, Don. Talk back to the military. What's frightening to me, but not shocking, is this monster, Hegseth, from our own Fox News, he's talking about having this as a religious war, and talk about scary Christian fascism. I know that as recently, I don't know how recently, but he's been having Christian ministers in, some of the worst, coming to speak at the Pentagon, and that is horribly scary. But as to, you mentioned that some of the top generals, maybe they're scared to do anything, but I have read that some of the soldiers, in fact, just before the first group has gone out, there's more, I don't know that it's a high percentage, of people who are saying, I can't do this. Conscientious objection is now spreading. And I know you, Don, you worked a lot on that some years ago, and I'm hoping that more and more soldiers are thinking about that.
Yeah, the Center for Conscience and War has reported a huge surge of CO applications, unlike anything they've seen for quite a few years, maybe dating back to Don's and my experience. So also...
That's great.
Yeah. Don?
It's one thing to think about what's going on and say, well, what if we get rid of Trump? Of course, Vice President Vance, he is no better. And so it's the main thing is to having people in the streets. And I know Medea Benjamin is going to be talking about how ICE was gotten out of the around the country, how it has been under attack, the cultural backing for getting all these people then kicked out of the U.S., immigrants. And there's also going to be people who are local people who are quite involved with it, because it's the whole country, our left wing, was so enthused about what happened here in Minneapolis, St. Paul. I mean, it followed up on things that developed in Chicago, New Orleans, and in Portland, Oregon, and Los Angeles. But here it was much more widespread, and it was one of my magazines that I distribute in my economic life was... resist like Minneapolis. And having the idea of resistance, that people don't put up with it and that are using all their powers to not hang back, but they're also creating these social bonds between people, fulfilling people's dietary needs so they don't have to go to the stores, and to taking people to doctor's offices and the like. So that this is why they're trying to create an attitude in favor of white Christian nationalism. That's why they're willing to get rid of anybody who is so many people who aren't white colors. And so this is really drawing together all these disparate things that we have been learning and talking more and more about on the role of racism and the like, which has been affecting this country over the decades. And we're starting to pull out of it, when Trump now is calling all this woke ideology. Well, woke ideology, I mean, he's saying that if you know that something is wrong, you wake up to it, what's wrong with that? Rather than just accepting something else.
Right, and our organizations that are fighting this, nonprofit organizations, you know, we've been concerned for a while because we are labeled terrorists, you know, and of course we know who the real terrorists are, so this is all very scary. And back to just a minute ago, let's see, Don was talking about the mutual aid and all the incredible things that were going on during this fascist invasion by the federal forces. I mean, that was really good. That was great. And we'll continue to do that because we know that ICE is not really gone. We want to get rid of them now.
Yeah, the threat of Christian fascism is not an exaggeration, unlike the term terrorism, which is thrown around to a nearly meaningless extent. If you ever listen to Hegseth, you can really see a homegrown fascist in action. And this is a real threat in the military. A lot of people aren't aware of how much these officers are actually trying to proselytize on behalf of their so-called Christian vision. There's a Foundation for Military Religious Freedom, which is set up to defend against and file lawsuits against this kind of religious proselytizing in the military. And they say they have more offenses and more cases, more potential cases than they've ever had. So this is a real thing. Christian officers proselytizing within the military, so it's not only at the highest level that they have this kind of maniac behavior. I want to play one more tape while we have time here. Pepe Escobar is a well-known international political analyst and author, and he's again on Glenn Beeson show. With Glenn again has great interviews. So here's 7 or 8 minutes.
Ask about Iran, obviously, as the world is looking at, you know, shock and horror of what's happening. And I often think about U.S. General Wesley Clark. You know, he made this comment regarding what happened after the September 11 attack, arguing that they had a plan to take out 7 countries. They were going to take out Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan. And of course, the grand finale was Iran. And even Bush, you know, thereafter put, you know, Iran on this axis of evil. And why is this so important to the Americans? Because this is a very different target than they had over the past 30 years. Everyone, all the U.S. presidents, it seemed more or less wanted to go after Iran. They all shared the same rhetoric of Trump, but they knew that it would be too much, too big, you know, to try to take. But still, Trump went all the way. What do you see as being the strategic significance here, besides, you know, liberating girls and all this helping protesters, this nonsense?
No, this Glenn, this is way more complicated. Iran is the holy grail. Well, I am one of the last old school foreign correspondents on the planet. I was in Afghanistan before, during, and after, including 9/11, and I was in Iraq before, during, and after, and I was going to Iran during the 2000s many times, including at the time when Rumsfeld, the Cheney regime, was talking about bomb, 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 bomb Iran. That was John McCain's refrain every week, in fact. So we all knew Iran was the big price. It always was, according to the Project for the New American Century, according to Clean Break, according to the Zionist influence in D.C. already in the 90s everywhere. So of course, they couldn't do it before. And what the famous Wesley Clark quote, in fact, they got everybody. And of course, the only missing piece was Iran. So this war was planned. We can say that this war was planned since the late 90s, in fact. Not only the past 20 years or 25 years, even more than that. The previous millennium. And, of course, now they found the perfect messenger. what some of my Chinese friends, scholars call the baboon in the White House. I love it. The barbarian baboon in the White House, totally controlled by Zionists, totally controlled not only by Netanyahu, but the circle around Netanyahu, the International Zionist Alliance, which especially financial, and of course, his inner circle. The people who he actually listens to, there are not many, they're making a lot of money out of this war. And that includes everybody, starting with the ghastly Jared Kushner. This should be an investigation in itself, but obviously, because there's no more investigative journalism in the U.S., only you see this only in fringe Substack accounts, for instance. But how Kushner is profiting, even starting when he left the White House after Trump 1.0, when he got the first $2 billion for his affinity partners from MBS directly. Basically, MBS wrote a check for Kushner. And now the price is even higher, it's $5 billion. He's getting $5 billion from the Saudis for pushing, of course, the father of Ivanka, let's put it this way, and the real brains in that couple is not Jared Kushner, it's actually Ivanka. He is an absolutely ghastly, low-life, cheap real estate entrepreneur. But, of course, Trump's listened to him. That's very, very dangerous. So he was the main seller of this war, face-to-face to Trump or ear-to-ear to Trump. And everybody is profiting. Lutnick, Chris Wright, Secretary of Energy, all these, it's absolutely, all these people, Besant, all of them. So for them is also a free ride financially. The big, big picture, of course, is Eretz Israel, Greater Israel. And that, according to them, is advancing fast if they can eliminate the only regional superpower, which is Iran, and the only competitor to Israel to be the number one power all across West Asia. So there was never any planning about that. And they thought it would be a decapitation strike and the whole thing would be over the weekend. And on Monday, we would have mission accomplished, you know, the Wall Street, you know, going through the roof and all that. So that was the planning. When things started to be derailed half an hour after the decapitation strike on February 28 against Ayatollah Khamenei and a great deal of the leadership, they had no plan B. And they still don't. And what just happened a few minutes before we start talking, which is something absolutely extraordinary. When we were all expecting the beginning of the real highway to hell of bombing the electricity grid of Iran, there was taco. Trump always chickens out all over again. And why? Because he looked at the numbers, he looked at the markets, he looked at gold, he looked at the bond market, and obviously panic set in. So he had to back off. And by some time, for the moment it's 5 days, we don't know how this is going to play. But the most interesting thing is that a few minutes later, the Iranians went online and basically told the whole planet that the president of the United States is a liar. There are no conversations going on at the moment. And this is something that we hear from Araghchi, foreign minister, from Kalibaf, the head of the parliament, from other sources, political sources across Iran. He made that up. And the main reason, and this is something when you talk to financial analysts, they tell you, the main reason is the bond market. When Trump saw that the bond market was going totally out of control, like, you know, the yields for 10-year treasuries is getting to 5%, actually went to over 5%, came back to 4, 4.5, and now I think it's 4.4 or something, and it may go up again.
Okay, that was Pepe Escobar, and he's really good on international affairs. He was on the Glenn Beeson program.
So, I hope you appreciate all the information we presented from a number of different sources here on Northern Sun News with Don Olson and Dave Gudnick. And we are, of course, on KFAI, and this is the next to the last day of our pledge drive. And we would like you to call up and pledge your support, 612-375-9030, or to go online at kfai.org and pledge. And so it's we need the money. We're small, but we're feisty. We try to do as well as we can. We have a lot of different communities that are represented here. And so against a lot of what the Trumpites don't like, 612-375-9030.
Yeah, I got one more thing that shows that some of the problems with the current strategy, to put it mildly, problems, is penetrating through the mainstream. And New York Times, which is very far from an anti-war voice, they've actually disgraced themselves for quite a few years, in my opinion. But they have an editorial column of this morning, and I'm going to read just two paragraphs to indicate that even in the establishment paper, and the New York Times embodies that better than any media, they're having grave doubts. Quote, both views, Trump as aberration or Trump as history's fulfillment, had America as the protagonist of its own story, with the world as a stage. I needed a wider frame, this is the columnist speaking, an honest engagement with history and a willingness to admit that America is like any other nation, just one place in the world. America does not know how to exist in a world it does not control. Since its inception, America has assured itself it was simply too big, too far away, and too richly endowed to suffer any serious consequences for its action. But there will be no escaping the cataclysm in Iran. In its wake, there is a chance to recognize our place in an interconnected world and see ourselves clearly.
And we don't want to leave without you telling. A lot of people have been saying, well, geez, Cuba, they're going to be rescued by the oil coming from Russia.
Yeah, well, they were so desperate about the oil price getting out of control and making the administration look very bad that they lift the sanction on Russia, Russian oil, except for Cuba. They are so determined to punish Cuba, it is obscene. And so the Russian tanker that was headed there got stalled in other islands because Russian oil cannot be allowed for Cuba. It's disgraceful.
So there it is. It's they're trying to make it us, the U.S., against the world. And it's the people that are rising up, need to rise up. We have to be stressing everything. So coming this weekend, Medea Benjamin at the WAM annual meeting, Saturday morning at the New City Center, 31st and 16th Avenue, 9:30 for breakfast, 10 a.m. program. The No Kings Rally this Saturday at 2 p.m. at the State Capitol. And this has been the Northern Sun Radio News Show with Don Olson, Dave Gudnick, and Molly Weber-Cohen also helped us out there with a few pithy remarks, too.
Welcome to MN90, Minnesota History in 90 Seconds.
January 1969. An ad appeared in TB Digest. Eight lucky ladies to have breakfast with Mr. Spock, star of Star Trek. And where was this proposed meeting with an extraterrestrial from planet Vulcan supposed to take place? At the Winter Carnival in St. Paul, Minnesota.
It's an interesting planet. I believe you'll find it quite pleasant, very much like your Earth.
But that January was shaping up to be a bad one for Leonard Nimoy, the actor who'd portrayed Spock on the science fiction TV series since 1966. The network had already shoved the series into the unfavorable 10 p.m. Friday night slot. Now it was saying that the episode the cast had finished filming January 9th would be the last. Nimoy was out of a job, or at least that job, as he settled down in his chair at the Three Crowns restaurant in the St. Paul Hilton that February for his winter carnival breakfast with the lucky ladies. By the end of the year, however, Leonard Nimoy would be back on TV with Mission Impossible as Paris, Master of Disguise.
MN90 is produced by Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities. Made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Online at mn90.org.